Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Tonight, it's Jamil Graham and you, the listeners, and I'm really pleased to meet you. I am here to share with you more intimately what's going on, how this show has come about in my life and what I would like to do with it to be in service to all of humanity and where I see my life and all of our lives connecting and where we're all going and the choices that we can make to get there and make it a nicer ride, perhaps, as well. And something very exciting has happened this week. Now, for many folks who might be passing by BBS radio, this might not be that uncommon to hear. There are changes going on in our sky. We are definitely in a galactic alignment period. There are changes in tidal levels and all these sorts of astronomical phenomena. The extraterrestrial presence is increasing and getting a lot more responsible and intelligent, science-based response and tremendous attempts being made to make this information available to us, the common people here on planet Earth. And this is very exciting. And I am a Sirius moon person. And the moon and I go way back. She's the one that I always must find in the sky. It's something like the sun I take for granted because the sun always shines, right? The sun, you don't have to look for the light. You know it's there. And if you eat today, you know that that food, assuming you eat fresh food, but even the packaged food started out fresh at some point and then became a package. Or if you eat fresh food, raw food, like I do a lot, then every day I'm reminded the sun shined and the sun nourished this incredible carrot and the cabbages and all those things that nourish my body. But the moon, now she has to be sought out. And the thing about the moon that has always intrigued me since I was a little child was that it's one thing that we share all around the globe. The seasons we don't share. There's a lot of natural flora and fauna we don't share, but we always share the moon. And I always thought that was really cool that the moon went around the whole globe and everybody got to see the same moon. So she's been a passion of mine, and I have always had to know where's the moon. Everywhere I've ever lived, everywhere I've traveled, following the moon has been part of the deal. So I have been in a period of re-entry the last few months, and I'm going to start with the end of the story, then I'll tell you the beginning. So I want to tell you right now what has happened this week with the moon. I live very close to a beach in Massachusetts called Revere Beach, and it's a 3-mile stretch of public beach that basically faces south-southeast. I have my compass out. And the walking of the 3-mile beach has been a mainstay for me for the last 5 years. I have walked this beach year-round. When I have been in town, I have always come to the beach. It has become my anchor in nature, and I have enjoyed quite an intimate relationship with the birds that migrate and the dogs and the children that play in the summer. And so this week, I was walking on the beach, and all the time I have ever walked on this beach, for 5 years I have walked this beach, I have always gone to the water's edge and gazed out at the moon. In whatever phase the moon has been, I have always gazed out over the water and seen the moon. And I have stared for hours at the moon over the water and the reflection of the moon in the water. And I've been joined by many on the public beach, which is something I really like about this beach, is that it's a shared and loved natural resource. So I have walked to that edge of the water and gazed out over the water looking at the moon until this week. This Thursday, I had one of those days where something was going on, and I was very aware. I was agitated, and I was paying attention, and I walked the beach. And when I was walking back at 7 o'clock at night, I looked up in the sky, and the moon was over my head. The moon has never been over my head on this beach in 5 years that I have walked it, night and day. And I have been catching little this and that, hearing stuff circulating. I keep an eye on the alternative stuff, and I've heard people talking about the moon and the sun shifting. And now I have experienced that, in fact, the moon path has changed. The other thing that immediately came to mind, it's interesting how intuitive data gathering works. One thing happens, and then all of a sudden it lights up a string of events or a string of things that suddenly are connected. And as this has been sinking in since Thursday, I have suddenly become, something is going on with the sun. That where it used to rise, it does not, because I used to watch a year ago in November, I was very clearly watching the sun rising. I could see the sun rising from my window. And I have not seen the sun rising from my window. And so I have noticed that the light has changed since the fall equinox predominantly. So I have got my compass out and been going nuts, which is a great opportunity to learn and really, okay, let's get some science around this. Let's look at what is going on in the sky. And we have an amazing full moon out there today, a beautiful full moon. And I have been staring at the moon and watching it. And I would like to, first off, before we get too much into wherever we're going to go with this conversation, I would really like to welcome any callers, any listeners out there who are likewise moon observers, moon appreciators, moon lovers. Is there anybody out there who has noticed anything or would like to share a little science about this? I know that the moon changes its path and its elliptical orbit. I'm aware of that. And so I would like to share notes with anybody who likewise has been noticing anything going on with the moon. And the phone number to call in is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. So if anybody would like to give a buzz and share their moon story, it's been very interesting. I have passed the story in my excitement. I am very passionate about things when I get my teeth into them. I've been very interested. And as I have been talking to people, I have noticed that a lot of people don't have a similar relationship to the moon. And I've suggested, well, where is that place that you commune with the moon? Where is that rock you sit on in nature? Where is that meadow that you hang out with your friends and stare up? That place where you know where the moon is, where you are familiar with where the moon should be. You sit there, you know that place, that's where you watch the moon. And I haven't yet I'm just starting, mind you, but I would love to talk to people who have a relationship with the moon and know where the moon is supposed to be in their sky. And this is kind of funny, their sky. But so if you are at all inclined, please do give a ring. 888-815-9756. And this is an appropriate segue to where I would like to share in just who I am and what I'm doing here and how this radio show, Alchemy of Light and the Study of Consciousness, is something that I feel I can bring a worthy voice to in the exploration, as whatever is going on for all of us, we are all in this together. And the one thing that we all can do, and there are so many things to do, but the one thing that we absolutely all can do is we can work on our own consciousness. We can begin to develop a relationship with that part of us inside of ourselves that understands or doesn't understand, that chooses to act or doesn't choose and reacts, that observes or moves on automatic. We can do something about that. We can choose to be kinder to ourselves. We can choose to listen to ourselves. And by listening to ourselves, I believe we learn to listen to others. And as much as there are so many incredible teachings and so many people are saying the same thing using different words, and it's beautiful. It is such a fantastic time to be alive and sharing in this amazing unfolding of humanity here on planet Earth, our little bit of the galaxy, our little grain of sand in the cosmos. We are all sharing this magnificent transcendence, and that we can do something to make it as good as we can is very empowering. It's a very positive place to begin a conversation of change. Change is the one thing that we can count on. And as things are changing all around us, we have a choice of how we are going to respond to that. And responding is not the same as reacting. And those are things that we can do something about. That is the one thing that we can do something about. We can actually make a difference in how we respond to a situation. And here is an example. If you come across, or we come across, here's a real life example. I ride the trains a lot in Boston, and somebody got on the train, and she had a child, two children, one in the carriage and one just standing. And the child started screaming. And so the mother was trying to comfort the child and, you know, didn't really know what to do about the child. And the train was pretty full and people were getting edgy. And then a man sat down beside the woman and just started talking to the child. And immediately, the child looked up at this man, and he was very kind. He was projecting a lot of kindness toward this child. And he didn't say a lot. He just sat down next to the woman, which to me looked like it was a way of him, you know, buddying up with her, like he was trying to help. And immediately, the child quieted. And that was so beautiful to witness to me. I thought, wow, you know, and the sound of children screaming does not please the nerves. It really, you know, it can really make you want to react and throw something and, hey, you know, control your child and all these temptations to be hardened. And you could, I could feel that going around in the train, you know, what are we going to do? But this one person just sits down and starts talking to the child, and he chose to respond in a positive way, which diffused the child and brought comfort, obviously, to the mother and the whole train. And all he did was sit and offer a kind word. And that, to me, is just such a really small example, but that is something we can do every day. And why don't we do that every day? And why does it matter that we even think about it? And why do some people think about it and other people not think about it? And all these questions and all these things are a lifelong pursuit and a lifelong journey of fascination for me. So I would like to just, I'll share a little bit about how I got started, where I've recently come from. I was, as a young person, very aware globally of the world. I had a very strong understanding of a bigger picture of the world. And I've been studying about near-death experiences. And it's kind of ironic in a way because my mother, Juliet Nightingale, who had a show here on VBS Radio as well called Toward the Light, she was a multiple near-death experiencer. And in her experiences, I was not really keen to listen to her because whenever she spoke of her near-death experiences, within the first three sentences, she was making it really clear how much she wanted to go back to the light. And we began our journey. We adopted each other when I was 18, and I really didn't want to hear her leaving. How could she leave me? You know, she was talking about this beautiful place, this beautiful dimension of consciousness, and there was love there, and she was at home there, she was safe there, and I didn't want to hear it, because that meant she was going to leave me, and so I tuned her out, and I didn't tune her out, of course, in all of the relationship, but I really didn't want to hear about the NDE, so now I'm reading. Now I'm learning. And last year, actually, let me back up just a little. So in the studying, one of the things that's been made very clear is that when people go through these very powerful life-transforming experiences, the near-death experience and other related spiritually transformative experiences where they are thrust literally into a whole new reality, a whole new understanding of the world around them. And then they come back to the world and the situation and the people, the family, the friends, etc., that they left behind, and they have changed. They have radically, radically changed. And they do not find the support more often than not, anywhere. Not anywhere. Their friends, their loved ones, their closest people to them are much like I was. You know, we didn't really understand. We didn't, for whatever different reasons, we were not open. And people have a hard time allowing them to be different. I didn't have that experience, that part of the experience with Juliet, because I never knew her any other way. But for other people who have had a spouse and family and all these things and then come back, their spouses and closest people they don't have room in their awareness, in their consciousness, for a new spouse. They were not able to be open and embrace them, which this is further exacerbated by the medical industry itself and its total denial of soul. And that is how I say it. The total denial of soul in the medical industry includes denying the fact that we have been here before. It denies the fact that we have an emotional body, just for one. Basically, what I want to say is we have subtle bodies. We have many energetic bodies that are connected to our physical body. The physical body in the current medical paradigm here in the West only acknowledges the physical body, except in their black ops, but those mind control programs are not something the public is supposed to know about. So, for, you know, upright citizens, we all are informed that all we are is a body. That's it. So, for the NDE-er returning, who's had this profound experience of another dimension, to be welcomed with total ignorance, apathy, indifference, and plain cruelty from the medical industry itself, then to go home and not find welcoming, concerned, open minds more often than not always, really sets them apart in the society. And so I have been humbled, very humbled. I was attending a talk by PMH Atwater a year ago about child NDEs. And when she was talking about the child NDEs, and she was talking about people who had actually had NDEs in the womb and the things that they had experienced and remembered. And then she started talking about the ways that these children integrate in a unique way in their growing up. And I felt this incredible chill and felt like crying. I knew something had happened. And I went home and I thought, oh my goodness. And suddenly, the same as this other experience, you know, that light went on, and suddenly several events that I had been told about as a child, in particular in the gestation period when I was in my biological mother's womb, they all went on at the same time. And I realized that I had had an NDE. And then I started studying with a whole new fervor. Oh my God! That actually made a lot of sense. Because a lot of the things they talk about, the child NDE has a sense of the bigger picture, the experience has a defining mark in their consciousness, that the unity consciousness is something that changes people ultimately in a near-death experience. And I suddenly saw myself in such a big way, and I realized, you know, now I wish I could talk to my mom about my NDE. Oh my God. So I have been talking to her, actually, and we're really glad that she is, left her body now. In so many ways, we are able to talk as we never did before. And, oh my goodness me. So it's really been humbling to look at that. And several of the things of my childhood, several of the decisions that I made, several of the ways that I handled different people and situations, it never occurred to me that anybody else would do it any different, that this made a lot of sense. And now I feel like at 47, I am realizing that that is not the way that a lot of people see the world. That the one thing that I have definitely been connected to since birth is this understanding of interconnection. Everything is always interconnected. Everything in my life, every person I meet is interconnected. I have always had a very strong sense of the long run. I have always known that what I do today doesn't just matter tomorrow. It matters in 100 years because it's not me that it's about. It's not me that it affects. It affects all the people on all the galaxies forever and ever. I have always had this sort of sense of knowing, of responsibility even, that what I do and how I do it doesn't just affect me, it affects everybody. It affects the whole. And in this light, I have always known that I need help. I have always known that it's wise to seek guidance and counsel from those who have gone before me. And I have always had this instinctive looking out for elders. I have always sought elders to talk with, to be with, to learn from, to listen to, and to hear their stories. And I have always learned from other people's mistakes. I have been able to realize that they are me from a very young age. And that doesn't mean that I'm any less selfish in some ways, or that I have any fewer warts or any fewer challenges of my own. But my way of approaching the whole thing was just this sense of knowing that whatever I did to that person was going to come back, and had some very striking lessons along the way as a young person that were hammering that point in. And one of them was with this gentleman admirer. I was about 16, and he was, I don't know what he was, just completely head over heels for me or something. And he was writing these poems and writing these poems, and he just wrote beautifully. I mean, incredibly beautiful poetry. And he drew these incredibly beautiful pictures, and he would, and put them in these beautiful cards. And he would follow me, and he would catch me coming out of the class, or catch me going to my car, or catch me, and he would give them to me. And he always had this look. His eyes were very brown and very sad and kind of crazy. And so he frightened me. He was always pursuing me with this beautiful poetry, and it really was beautiful. It made me cry. I'd read this and I'd go, "Wow, my God, what is he talking about?" And he thought he was talking to me, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I got really kind of edgy, and I was really angry. I was really bitchy, a lot more near. I've calmed down a lot since then, but I really pushed him away. I said, "You know, just leave me alone." He frightened me. So it was just a few weeks after this one major confrontation that I sent him on his way that I got word that this young man, he had actually killed himself. He had put himself in a dryer, in a laundromat, and taken barbiturates, and he was found there. And that really affected me. I was immediately wondering if I could have done something to help make that different. Could I have done anything that would have changed his decision? I suddenly felt a responsibility, like I might have been able to help him if I could have listened to him, if I could have not just been so cold and so frightened and so negative. And I mean, these weren't bad poems, and they weren't creepy either. I mean, I didn't understand them, but I felt like I missed something. I missed something. There was, and he was gone. And so that was an experience that really kind of shook me up. Not only did it shake me up about feeling the need to be kinder, but also it shook me up about the whole dating game. You know, I realized, whoa, man, don't ever be messing with anybody's heart. You know, I realized that at the end of a crazy word or funny eyes or strange poetry or whatever, there's a person inside of there, a person. A person that has a whole life going on, a person that has thoughts and feelings and needs. And it's not about me. It is not about me. So while it's not about me, and I'm a part of this play in one of the acting roles, I have a responsibility. And I'm not responsible for the choices that other people make. But if I can choose how I would like to see things go, then I would really like to choose to be an energy, be a person, be a little light on the planet that creates a space that is safe for people to be whatever they are and to be wherever they are at. And does that mean I want to hang out with them? No. But does that mean I'm cold and frightened and critical? No. Because I don't know what that person is going through. I really, really don't know. So it's not my place to judge. And I have learned this over and over again. That was one of the many things that happened in my childhood that just made it sure. It was like this whole energy was just really making sure that I understood that my behavior mattered. And there were some really, really hard lessons. Really hard lessons. But one of the things that was also going on is that I was very rich in my inner life. I've always had a very strong relationship with my dream world, and I call it dream consciousness. And I'm really inspired about what's happening in the conversation of consciousness, because we're on the threshold of changing the whole dictionary. We are going to recreate the science of consciousness into a science that actually more closer aligns with the entire human process and our connection, not just to each other and ourselves, but to the whole of the universe. And that is our right place. That is our right place here on planet Earth as universal citizens, as a human having an experience here. We are still part, and especially a part of the universe. And this opportunity we have that we are taking upon ourselves is so exciting. We are going to make a science that is multidimensional, that reflects all of humanity, all life forms, all in the balance of universal justice. Oh, wow. So consciousness to this point actually there's been so much work done already toward this that the greatest opportunity right now, I think, is to network a lot of the tremendous work that's being done by independent scientists predominantly. We have an imbalanced, disproportionate belief that a scientist is an authority in our way of doing and being, and that's being conditioned belief in our consciousness, in our culture here in the West, But I really beg to differ. I don't believe that science has a place in authority. The science is not the decision maker. Science is the exploration. Science is the place where we delve into the mysteries, where the only thing we care about is finding the next level of mystery and unfolding that and uncovering that and dissecting that and sharing that. A very, very, very important part of science, the essence of true universal justice science, is that it is a service to humanity to educate all of the human race about itself. And science today does not do that. That science that they got going on, I think they all are missing the point. They haven't figured that out, that a really, really good science theory can be explained easily to somebody who is 5 years old, you know? That is the true essence, the true mission, the true service to humanity that I believe science is. It is the exploration of all of our phenomena. It is not the authority to decide what is right or what is wrong. It has nothing to do with all that. It is simply an explorative tool for all of us. So this is a whole new change in consciousness. The way we think and feel about science is a key point in how we bring this change about. We have a lot to learn about just how powerful our thoughts and feelings are, and how our thoughts and feelings actually create space for us becoming the totality of who and what we are intended to do and be. And in our current consciousness, we have many things to look at. So let's begin. That's the essence of the mission here at Alchemy of Light, to bring in a space in our consciousness, to really take hold of our consciousness and who we are as human beings and see what we want to do with that, rather than taking all the answers that are given us. Let's ask a few questions. Let's become proactive with the things that we see going on. And when we see something going on that maybe we would like to see different, rather than say, oh, well, that's the way it is, why not say, hey, what is that? Is there anything I can do about that? How do I feel about that? How does that make me feel? Because consciousness, I believe, is more connected to feeling than thought. Our feelings are way beyond five senses. The five sense reality is another opportunity to expand and grow our consciousness, because we are sensory beings. The entire human body is one big clump of nerves, and nerves feel. Nerves communicate with themselves. They communicate to the world around. The whole human is one big sensory board in motion. We are feelers. We feel things. And that is our power. That is our strength. That is the guide to all of our greatest challenges. How do we feel? And it's kind of like the water. If we're a boat, say our boat is our body. Our boat is our mortal incarnation. And our boat is out on the water. And the water is our emotions. And the water is our source of mobility. The water, our feelings, are what guide our journey. And when we pay attention to the water, when we are mindful of our emotions, when we are paying attention to how we're feeling and if it's working, then we know if our boat is heading into danger. And we know if our boat is getting too close to shore. We know if there's a storm coming. If we don't pay attention to our feelings, if we're not aware of what's going on in the water that our boat is on, we can get in a lot of trouble. And it looks like trouble because it feels lousy. All of a sudden you realize, oh my God, this boat has hit the ground. How did that happen? There's no water. There's no feeling. There's no water. There's no feeling. I feel nothing. Oh my God. And my boat is in the water. Well, what happened to your feelings? They didn't go away. In our consciousness, we were not able to bring them in. And our consciousness is mostly feeling. So there's been a substantial disconnect in the large body of humanity from its feelings. And from its feelings is where the compass is. And that in consciousness, perhaps even that is consciousness. You know, this is a new exploration and it's an old exploration. And part of the excitement of the time is that we're discovering these new things that are so old. We haven't discovered anything new yet. There's nothing new. All we're doing is pulling out a bunch of really cool old records, man. And they sound so good. They are the songs that we really want to hear because they are the truth. They are the truth. And we feel something when we listen to those old songs. When we hear certain words, when we hear about grids, or we hear about Atlantis, or we hear about Lemuria, we hear about extraterrestrials, we hear about this stuff, and it makes us feel. We feel something. It's not our head, it's our heart. We feel something. And we are instinctively drawn to that because our feelings, that water, wants to push us to the truth. If we are not paying attention and we let another voice keep driving our boat away from where our feelings want us to go, then we might just miss a really fantastic opportunity. And that's what I'd like to help facilitate in offering what I've learned in my life and what I'm continuing to learn in my ability to network and communicate and share. And so I would like to now I'll offer a little bit about the most recent part of how I got here. If there's anybody who'd like to call in, the phone number is 888-815-9756. And I'm going on and on here, but I really mean that. If there's anybody who would like to give a call, give a thought about consciousness, the changes, where we're going, questions, anything, feel free. So how I got here is that a few years ago, let me get back on my track here. Okay. I was doing pretty good. Pretty good. Juliet and I had been going through a lot of changes. Juliet had been in Nashville, Tennessee, and doing extraordinary. And I was in Boston area, and I was doing pretty good too. And I went through a major wake up, another major wake up in 1999. And in 1999, what happened was I was hanging out with a group of people, an international group of people. And Hi. Okay, hon. Okay. Have a great night. That was my housemate leaving. I did not tell her that I was doing a radio show. So, meet my housemate. Okay. Where were we? Okay. Well, I want to... Hello? Now I hear this strange... Okay, so I was, Okay, so I'm learning about this radio and all the different sounds, which is why I really wanted to do this by myself so I could get a sense of all these things. So now I learned that what that sound meant, which was Seth at the store. Okay, and now I have almost... Okay, I'm not totally off on my track, but I'm back. So I really wanted to share with you how I've come to this place. The last incarnation of myself was, as an entrepreneur, was a business I called What a Relief. And What a Relief was a business that was born in 2001, 2002, actually 2002, after I had gone through a major consciousness shift after the 9/11 dissolution, total destruction, false flag operation of the World Trade Centers being destroyed. And I was aware at the time that it was a false flag operation as well. What many people in New York City knew, that there was a lot of mayhem in this story. So I changed my course radically at that point, and What a Relief was born out of a series of dreams that I had where I was actually connecting with people and helping them feel better about things again. I was working with a lot of disconnected spirits and helping the spirits regain their confidence in their bodies again, helping the spirits re-enter their bodies. And in these dreams, I was watching people go from being almost comatose in motion, you know, the eyes were blank, to suddenly being back in their bodies. I was watching their souls return to their bodies. And I was very excited, and I thought, oh, this is coaching. And I was thrilled to find out that there was actually a coaching industry. I was happy about that because I had never heard of it, but I really was glad I didn't have to go out and create it. So I was joining in, and What a Relief was born to pursue this dream, to support people's awakening in their bodies from a disconnected place. And it was a very successful business. I was truly able to do that. There were two parts of it. There was organizing and there was life coaching. And the organizing was focused on the left brain, helping people materialize their dreams. And the right brain was focused on the inner relationship, aligning themselves internally with who they are, who they were trying to be, and then helping them manifest their dreams. I was very focused on finding people who had a dream they were trying to bring to fruition. And for a couple of examples, I helped somebody make a long trip. I helped somebody finish a construction job. I helped people make changes with their home situation and spouses. I helped people fulfill dreams to take studies abroad. I was able to really facilitate people helping themselves. My whole approach was to allow them to find their own strength because I could see that in them, which I think comes from, you know, just the whole story. But the fact is that I can see that. I can see people's potential. And to me, the whole coaching organizing was focused on really asking the right questions and allowing people to hear in their own voices their own great wisdom. And they have, every one of us, every one of us has that profound innate wisdom and that profound innate knowing. And I see that in every person. And I still see that in every person. So the water relief, we're working out really good, actually doing good. And then I was with a close friend of mine, Richie, and he died. And he shared his last year and a half with me, and he was a very close friend. We were really close for over 10 years. We were tight. We didn't live to, we weren't lovers or any of that. We were just really close friends. And we, to share his death passage was extraordinary. To see him leave his body. And I saw him leave. I saw him leave, and I was so excited. And not being inhibited by such things, I took off after him in my consciousness. And that was the beginning of the end of what a relief. I could not continue my life again as I knew it after having that experience. I had another near-death experience, an empathic near-death experience. I shared in the process of his demise and shared in the process of his transcendence. And I was changed. And due to a lot of people looking after me, I was able to close up What a Relief and complete a dream of my own to travel to Barcelona to study Spanish. I thought, I don't recommend going to Barcelona for studying Spanish, mind you. However, if you want to study Catalan, please, that is the place. But in any case, my dream was to go to Barcelona, and thanks to a lot of love and a lot of people looking after me, I closed up What a Relief, and I made that journey. For 3 months, I spent there, and I was completely able to let go of so many thoughts and feelings that I had, and suddenly things started to come into perspective. Suddenly, I realized a lot of things in Barcelona, that in the world situation, I saw a lot of the very same things going on in Barcelona, and I started really taking a whole new look at everything and was just in awe of how many pieces were just falling together. Everything just started falling together. The dots were connecting. I didn't have to do anything but watch the dots connect. And, oh, my God, what a relief. Talk about what a relief. I was ecstatic. I was just in awe. And then I came back from Barcelona in February '08, and my mother, Juliet Nightingale, was fast approaching her demise. And I have a lot I will offer as I go, but the short version of the long story is that I had come back and I was still holding on to What a Relief because I was very motivated now. I had this whole new level that I could bring in. I was really focused then on what I called mind-to-mind consciousness and the awareness that we create our reality and that it's and how we create our reality and that we're not in that we're not in control of the broadcast, but we're in control of the broadcast that we tune into. And oh my God, I was so excited. But the universe had other plans, and so I was with my mother, and I continued my journey of letting go in February, I let go of everything. I let go of everything. I came back to Boston. I let go of my house. I let go of 99% of my possessions. My goal was to get down to what I could carry. And there were two people looking after me. And it was a good thing because they really inspired me to hold on to a few things. And thank God they did. And then Carolyn, who was my first guest on the show, she welcomed me to stay at her house because my, obviously this plan that I was working wasn't working. It was not. So she said, why don't you just, you know, take a few things, don't let go of everything, and just park here. And so I was with my mother when she left her body in February of 2009. And another near-death experience, but this one was the big one. Juliet was my best friend. She was the person that I trusted and the only person I've trusted in so many ways. So, wow. Whatever I had been holding on to, including Water Relief and all of that, was now gone. And the last year I have been here, I was able to come back to the Boston area, and I'm living close to the beach, and put myself back together and took a whole year to grieve and be close, and have been sort of pushing myself now out to continue where I left off, to continue being of service, to uniting people to their magnificence in their body, that we can be these amazing, beautiful, talented, creative people, humans that live connected to our soul, that live connected to our soul calling, and that from that place, we make the right decisions that not only affect us, but affect everybody, every living being, from here to the multiverse and beyond. So that is my mission. That is what I'm here for, to provide this as an option to hopefully help people along. Alchemy of Light is the new business quote. It's the new calling. It's the new mission, the new vibration of becoming who we truly are and bringing in the light of all we can be, and making a world that we can live in because we dare to be ourselves. So that's my message. And next time, we will be welcoming back T. Lee Bowman. We will focus on the ELF and mental health. And this will be a really great part two, picking up really where we left off, exploring how we are not our bodies. So the ELF, the electromagnetic frequency around us, how that affects our thoughts and how we might be able to affect our own thoughts possibly. And then closing us out in 2010, I'm very grateful to be welcoming Alfred Weber. He will be talking about exopolitics and birthing that conversation, of which we will have many here on Alchemy of Light. So with that, I hope you all have a lovely fortnight and take care of yourselves and do take care of each other. Bye-bye.